Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. And before I introduce my guest today, I also want to say welcome to Mike, who's filling in for Eric Ryder while Eric's in Reykjavik. Hopefully he's there today. Welcome, Mike. We're pleased to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, isn't it? Just gorgeous outside.
It is a beautiful day. I could have kept driving up the coast this morning.
It's days like today that make us... It verifies why we choose to live here.
That's
just
right,
gorgeous.
That's right. And I was told when I first moved to Seattle on days like this, I need to keep it quiet and not let everyone else know.
It's our dirty little secret.
There you go. Well, as I was put, that's better. I can hear myself. I have this massive echo in my headphones. Sorry about that. So I want to just say, as I was putting together the notes for today's show, I wondered how many people have never had a sleepless night worrying about money, or how many people have never lain awake worrying about where they were going to get the money from for their kids' braces or kids' college education or medication for elderly parents, or even in some extreme cases in putting food on the table tonight. And I'm betting it's not many. Life happens, and at some point, everyone has some kind of cash flow crunch. Even million and billionaires do. And today, we're discussing a myriad of money issues, including tips for dealing with creditors, the facts and myths of bankruptcy, how to solve problems on your own if you don't want to go through a credit counseling agency, and some of the facts and myths around bankruptcy, and most importantly, developing the right attitude for building a financially secure life. And my guest today is Mitchell Allen. He's the founder, president, and chairman of Debt Education and Certification Foundation. It's debt-foundation.org. And he's a leading provider of personal debt management courses. He provides courses that help are used in over 200,000 counseling sessions, and he's personally conducted more than 1,000 interviews with individuals in financial crisis, so he knows what he's speaking about. I'm going to bring him on, and we're going to learn a little bit more about his background from Mitchell himself. Mitchell Allen, welcome to the show.
I'm absolutely glad to be here. How are you today?
I am terrific. Thank you so much. And thank you for being with us today, because I think this is an important topic. I've had quite a few requests from listeners and even from friends saying you should do a show about money, because a lot of people are affected right now in different ways.
It really is true. Over, according to Fortune, 1.5 million homes have received foreclosure notices in the first 6 months of this year. And over 1.2 million people have filed personal bankruptcy in the last 12 months. So it really is something that's not only in the news, but affects everyone on a very personal basis right now.
Right. And I want to just share a little bit more of your background, Mitchell.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually have an interesting background. I've been on both sides of the credit card and debt issue. Coming out of grad school, I had a math and statistic background, went to work for a relatively small credit card company that was then bought by perhaps the largest credit card company about 10 years ago. And there I helped develop statistical models that determined who we would send out credit card offers to, and then also to deal with interest rates and risk within their various portfolios. Then I switched to the other side. I like to say from the dark side.
The dark side.
That's right. From the dark side to the force, to the good side of the force, and dealt with helping people get out of debt. And I've consulted with hundreds of bankruptcy attorneys and other credit counseling organizations across the country. And then in 2005, I founded Debt Education and Certification Foundation. And there our mission is to provide education to people who are in serious financial trouble. And we've educated over 140,000 people without regard to their ability to pay, and really helping them in a time in their lives when they absolutely need it the most, when they're considering bankruptcy or going through bankruptcy, and they want to make sure that the fresh start that they get in bankruptcy isn't an end but a beginning, and that they have the tools in place where that they won't repeat some of the mistakes that they've made in the past.
Right. And I want to begin, I think, let's just talk about some of the credit card laws that have just changed. You said that you'd work both sides of the credit card fence here, so you know exactly what goes on when Congress passes new laws and credit card companies start to scramble to cover their butt and get what what they want in place before the law goes into effect. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about the new law. As I understand it, they're going to have to give us more notice for payment dues and more notice if our interest rates are going to change, increase. Is that
correct? They are. And you may have already noticed getting things in the mail, and several people I've heard reports of them seeing that their interest rates have already been going up, that they're making changes before the law goes into effect. But you're really going to see the biggest notice, I think, on your monthly statement. It's going to be much more clear about what interest you're paying, how long it's going to be taking you to pay off those things. I think it's going to be good for the consumer. But also interesting, recently in the news, there was New York, the Attorney General was cracking down on a debt collector. I want to make sure that people are aware that you have laws that will protect you, primarily the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act. Even though this was done in the late 70s, it's there to protect you. And if you feel that you're getting harassed, you have real protections in place. And I know many people who have been affected by this really abusive debt collection agency did not understand the rights that they had.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of those, because I had quite a few listener emails, and many of them had the same kind of theme. So I kind of summarized some of them. But one person, let me just find this email and I'll read it out to you, because I don't think this should be happening. This actually was from somebody who wanted to remain anonymous, which is fair enough. But he got laid off from Boeing, is trying to sell his home to move back to Chicago. Meanwhile, one of his creditors sends mail to him almost every day, stamps a big red delinquent payments or past due on it. So, you know, everybody who's has access to his mailbox, knows what's going on, and is being his wife is being harassed at work. That's not legal, right?
Well, it is until you tell them not to do it. You can limit, and this goes back to exactly that same act I was talking about, the Fair Debt Collections Practice Act. This was passed in 1978, and it's really to regulate debt collectors and eliminate abusive practices. If a creditor, it says that the creditors have to treat you fairly and respectively, and here's the big one to that listener. You can limit the times and ways in which you want to be contacted. So if you don't want to have them calling your work, simply tell the collectors, say, I'm at work, this is jeopardizing my job, please do not call me at this phone number at this time, but then you also need to give them an alternative way they can contact you. Same way with the letters. If you don't want them, letters, you can get those stopped, but you've got to make sure that you are communicating with your creditors or they're just going to escalate. And that's the main theme throughout A Survival Guide to Debt is communicate, communicate, communicate. Things are not going to get better if you ignore the calls and the letters.
Yeah. Now, some debts are they'll have their own debt collection agency, and at a certain point they might outsign those debts to a collection agency. And in my experience, because I used to be a banker, that some of those collection agencies can be really near the knuckle in the way that they treat people. Is writing a letter and telling them not to call them going to work in those circumstances too?
It really should. And that's the strength of the Fair Debt Collection Practices. If they're not following the letter of the law, and if you think they're abusive, say that they're abusive. Make sure you document what you're going to do. And you can seek damages against the creditor or the collector who violate your rights that are guaranteed under this provision. So make good note, make sure you know your own rights, and that's the point of this book as well, is to inform you about what your rights are, what they can do, and what they can't do. You can even then write a cease and desist letter, though if you do that, you really should get legal advice, because if they can't contact you through the phone or through correspondence, they really don't have much other alternatives, and they may end up suing you.
Mm-hmm. And Mitchell's written a great book. Mitchell Allen is my guest. He's written a great book called A Survival Guide to Debt, How to Overcome Tough Times and Restore Your Financial Health. And I think it's one of the most in-depth books that I've seen, Mitchell. And you give people a lot of tools if they want to resolve their issues by themselves or even avoid getting into those issues in the first place. You give a lot of tools, a lot of resources. And the website that goes along with this book is it A Survival or Survival?
Either one works. asurvivalguidetodebt.com.
Mm-hmm.
www.asurvivalguidetodebt.com. There's lots of free information on the website as well as forms. Some of the form letters that I give in the book are also available online. So there's a lot of information, and some of the stuff that I couldn't get into the book is on the website.
Yeah, and I wanted to make a point of letting our listeners know about that website because it is awesome. I took a look at it myself, and you know, one of the most common problems because I still get calls from people say, well, you used to be in banking. How do I handle this? And how do I handle that? And, you know, I often tell them, well, you need to write a letter, make sure everything's documented, which you stress in the book, too. But a lot of people don't like writing letters. And you've got these great forms on the website. You can literally go and plug in your name and address and particular numbers that you're dealing with. And up will come a letter. It's fantastic.
Well, I appreciate that. We had a great tech team to put those things together. And it really is. It's about being informed. It's very straightforward. You enter your name, and it'll appear, and then you can print these things off, save a copy for yourself, and send it off. But you're so right about communicating with your creditors. They want to work with you, and now more than ever. The banks are struggling just like individuals. They will work with you, and they have programs to work with you, whether it be your credit card, whether it be your car loan, or even your home loan. They will work with you, but you have to meet them at least halfway.
Mm. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to ask Mitchell how we get in a mess in the first place, because it can seem to happen overnight. It doesn't really, but it can seem that way sometimes. So stay with us. We're talking today with Mitchell Allen. His book is A Survival Guide to Debt, How to Overcome Tough Times and Restore Your Financial Health. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you like to read fiction, check out Book Talk Podcast Reviews, brought to you weekly by Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Go to conversationslive.net and click on the menu at Book Talk to hear reviews of an eclectic range of books. We review fiction from chick lit and mystery to suspense and literary, from new to old, overlooked and forgotten. Check out Book Talk Podcast today at conversationslive.net. If you'd like to suggest a book for review, email info@conversationslive.net or call 206-414-6159.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Notice anything different? You should. There's no other station like Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. Welcome back, everyone. My guest is Mitchell Allen, and we're talking about money issues today. We're talking about how we deal with creditors, how we can solve our own credit problems, how we can avoid getting there in the first place, and if we are in that mess, how we can start building a financially secure life for us. I'm having a hard time talking today, but never mind. My guest is quite coherent, so he'll get us through this, I think. Mitchell, I want to talk about how we get into this mess in the first place. It can seem that it happens overnight, but there's a very simple way we can avoid taking on more debt than we can pay for with a debt-to-income ratio. So let's talk a little bit about some of the warning signs that we're getting in over our head and what we can do to stem it before it gets out of hand.
You know, first I want to go back to the first part of that where you talk about what are the reasons people get into trouble. And I was talking with Kathy 2 weeks ago, and she lived in the Midwest. She had gotten a divorce 3 years ago. So now she'd split her household up. Her expenses were now literally twice what they were, but their income was the same. So then she's living paycheck to paycheck for the last couple of years. She seems to have things under control. She's getting a little bit of credit card debt. And then over the last year, the number of hours that she's working has been cut in half.
Yeah, common problem.
Now, yes, and so now she's gotten two of sort of the big four that are out there. Death or divorce of a spouse is one. Loss or reduction of income is another. So she had both those. Serious medical issues or just unexpected expenses. Those are the four reasons people mainly get in trouble, and that's what we see. But it's not just one of those. It's a combination, and that's what really is. Most people can handle one unexpected event or a divorce, but when you pile on something else, two things cause it to just go over the edge.
Mm.
But now the warning sign, this is going to be really obvious for the biggest warning sign, and that's if you're getting debt collection calls, you're in serious trouble. But even before that, many, many people are in trouble, but they wouldn't consider themselves in serious trouble, and yet they don't realize that they are. And they're doing something which is paying one debt off with another one. So when you're taking one credit card and you're paying off another one every month, so just the sort of robbing Peter to pay Paul, and even doing even a worse type of transfer, which is getting a home equity loan, a secured debt, to pay off unsecured debt. And I see that happen all the time.
Yeah. I was talking with friends the other day, and I think this is a common misconception. One guy was saying, I don't understand how so-and-so, this person he was discussing, can afford this, that, and the other, you know, the Mercedes and the big house and the holidays abroad. And I said, well, maybe he can't, because they have the same kind of jobs, right? Yeah. You know, maybe he really can't, and, you know, he's in debt up to his ears. So I think sometimes people look at other people and think, well, if they can manage it, I can manage it. But there are a lot of circumstances that factor into that.
You know what? It's all right. It reminds me, there's a cartoon in the book that we had a guy create, and it was saying, husband's talking to the wife, and it says, we don't have to keep up with the Joneses anymore. They filed for bankruptcy.
Oh, that's a good one to keep in mind. Let's look at debt-to-income ratio, because part of the reason we got into the mortgage crisis, and I don't really want to go too deeply into that because it's been done to death, but part of the reason is because people were buying houses when their debt-to-income ratio was way off base, and some unscrupulous lenders were, you know, kind of glossing over that fact. How do we determine for ourselves, without relying on anyone else, if we can afford a house or a car or a new boat or, you know, whatever it is we want?
Well, debt-to-income ratio is a very good thumbnail. And you can get a simple calculator online or just do it yourself. Now, debt is the total amount of debt, your debt payment that you have, and your income is the amount of income you have. And there are various guidelines, whether the government puts it out or state entities or magazines will chime in on what they think is a good debt-to-income ratio, or the amount of your income that should be spent on, say, a house or a car. And those things vary, but you need to make sure that you're not, clearly that your debt servicing is not a huge percentage of the amount of income you have. But that's one of the interesting things about bankruptcy, and just made me remember this. Many people, when they're filing bankruptcy, they go into bankruptcy, they're worried about their credit. But really, their credit's already extremely poor. Right. They've had many over-limit payments. They've got some collections, maybe a foreclosure or a repossession. And their debt-to-income ratio is way out of proportion. They don't have enough income, and they've got too much debt. After they end up filing bankruptcy and taking care of those debts, suddenly they are actually a better credit risk to many lenders because their debt-to-income ratio is so much better. And if they're not careful, they're going to get lots of credit card offers, and they must have the discipline not to get back in that same situation before they file bankruptcy.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about bankruptcy in a moment, but a good thumbnail for debt-to-income ratio is like 15 to 20%. Once we start getting up to 20%, we're getting near that mark where you don't want to be loaning anymore.
Particularly for, and you worked in a bank, particularly for houses, if that portion is taking up, that service of debt is taking up for your mortgage, that's about where you want to be. The lower, the better, as always. You'll see some, though, even up into the mid-20s that say that that's okay. And as you mentioned before, during the mortgage crisis, I don't even know. I know some people that weren't even looking at debt-to-income ratio, which
right.
is really insane.
Right. Yeah, I saw one guy being interviewed on television, and he'd bought a $500,000 house on a $30,000 income. And,
wow.
And was wondering why he couldn't pay it. And when they questioned him, he said, well, the loan officer told me to put down a different number. So,
yeah.
You know. So, yeah, we have to figure that out for ourselves. Let's look at some of the facts and some of the myths around bankruptcy, because nobody wants to go through that. There used to be a horrible stigma about it. But it is really there for people who are in desperate straits, right?
Yes, it is. And it's not to be entered into lightly. There is a bit of a change in thoughts about bankruptcy. A generation ago, there was a huge stigma about bankruptcy, mm-hmm. and you would do anything to avoid bankruptcy. Now, with all the celebrities that have filed bankruptcy, the corporations that have filed a reorganization, a Chapter 11 bankruptcy, there's not as bad of a stigma about personal bankruptcy. Additionally, they changed the bankruptcy laws in 2005. You can still file bankruptcy, but it's a little bit more difficult to file. Paperwork's a little bit more. It'll be slightly more expensive. It does give people the fresh start they need. It can wipe out their unsecured debt and their secured debt, such as their home or car. If they're behind on those, it can help them catch up. But you really should try to deal with it on your own or deal with a nonprofit organization to help you before you file bankruptcy. It's not something to be entered in lightly, but once you do, you need to make sure that it you only do it once.
Let's talk about, you just mentioned contact a nonprofit organization. We see adverts, you know, if we're not seeing adverts for Viagra and Prozac these days, we're seeing adverts for debt consolidation and organizations that say they can clean up your credit report and get you debt free. Not quite so simple as it sounds. Some of them are good organizations and some of them are pretty unscrupulous. How do we know the difference? Let's talk a little bit, first of all, about credit counselors, a separate
yes.
thing.
Yeah, I do want to separate those two out because there are nonprofit credit counseling organizations that will consolidate your credit card debt. You can make one monthly payment to them and then they'll distribute that money to your creditors. Generally speaking, this industry has been cleaned up over the last few years, and there are lots of very reputable organizations out there.
So how does it work, though, Mitchell? Do they, they take all your bills, and then they will contact the creditors, and they're like the intermediary? Is that how it works?
Yes, and they already have deals with most of your credit card organizations. This just deals with your credit cards. They will look at your situation. You'll tell them all your credit card information. They will then create a plan. And you'll make one payment to this credit card, this nonprofit organization. They'll hold that money in trust. And then once a month, they will send that money to your credit card company. So you make one payment, and they'll distribute the money for you. And generally in 60 months or 5 years, you'll be free of the debts that you've included in the plan. You need to be careful to make sure that all of your credit cards are dealt with in this plan. Some organizations don't deal with all credit card companies, and the ones that are not dealt with, you are going to have to deal with them yourself. Money Management International, that's a great organization. They're across the country. They're a fantastic nonprofit organization that's done some good work. As well as you can go to, I believe it's nfcc.org, and get a list of credit counseling organizations. And that same link is on our website. These types of organizations have really been cleaned up, and they are nonprofit organizations.
Okay, and then one final question on these guys: Do you pay back the full amount? Do they negotiate with a credit card company? How does that work?
Generally speaking, you are going to pay back the amount that you owe them, but your interest rates will be reduced.
Mm. And that's a key thing, isn't it? Getting that interest rate reduction.
It is. And in the book, I talk about dealing with it on your own, not just making more and spending less, but negotiating with your creditors. The same things that credit counseling organizations do and debt settlement companies, which we'll talk about, I think, in a second, you can do those same things yourself, but most people don't have the know-how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get informed yourself, you can negotiate lower interest rates, different payment dates, even a lower balance. if you will communicate with your creditors.
Mm. And that's a good point, because, you know, many people are genuinely embarrassed by, you know, a situation if they run into this kind of situation. I know a couple of people actually who personally, and I know many, you know, peripherally, who have worked hard all of their lives and never thought they'd be in this situation. So I think that's a good point. And you can find all of that information in Mitchell's book, A Survival Guide to Debt.
So, you know, there, I want to just make a great point about that. It's an absolute great point. If you'll call these people up and take some simple actions, first, acknowledge that you owe that debt, so take responsibility. But then, number two, be as specific as possible about why you can't pay that debt, whether it be divorce or loss of income. Then, number three, ask for help with amount, interest rate, payment date. Ask them what programs they have for people in your situation. And then, as you said, document everything. And here's the key. Follow through with everything that you say you're going to do with payment, letters, et cetera.
Mm. Yeah, you've got to treat it like a little job. It is it's a big job, but you've got to make sure it's taken care of. And communication, you stress this throughout the book, whether you're communicating with your partner, your spouse, your children, your creditors, communication is the key to getting this resolved.
Absolutely. And it is, you say it's a job, it is a job. It has taken many people months, if not years, to get in the financial situation that they're in right now. And it's going to take time to get out of it. It may not take 5 years, but it's going to take months, years. It is going to take real effort and dedication to get yourself out of the problem.
Yeah, and a couple of the questions, you've got survival tips in the book, and a couple of the questions you say to ask a prospective credit counselor: what services do you offer? Are you licensed? Do you offer free information? Do I have to have a formal written agreement or contract with you? How will you ensure the privacy and confidentiality of information that I give to you? All great questions.
It is, and you know, another one that is about the education. These organizations have great educational programs out there. And if you're paying off the debt, one thing, but it's getting educated about how you got into the situation and how we're not going to get it back into the same situation. And the credit counseling organizations generally have very good, if not exceptional, financial educational programs that go along with you repaying these debts over time.
Okay. Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's look at the debt settlement organizations, a whole different ball of wax. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Mitchell Allen, and his book is called A Survival Guide to Debt, How to Overcome Tough Times and Restore Your Financial Health. Please stay with us.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicky St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicky asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, we'll discuss the action program for moving beyond loss. Whether that's divorce, loss of a job, a loved one, your health, or one of life's other challenging events. Tune in Monday at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
You're listening to the refreshingly different Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And we're talking about money issues today. We're looking right now at what you can do to get yourself out of a mess if you're in a mess or know anybody who is in a mess. And then towards the end of the show, we'll be looking at what we can do to right ourselves we're going to look at some money personalities. So lots to fit in before the end of the show today, lots to talk about. But we just were talking about credit counselors and the benefits that they can provide to us. Mitchell, I wonder if you talk about debt settlement groups right now and what's happening with those, because I said to you during the break, I know somebody who used one, a less than reputable one, but, you know, to them it appeared above board and it actually got them into a worse mess than they were before.
They are. Debt settlement is very tricky. There's not a lot of regulation currently, so that's going to change, I feel, in the next few years. So it's sort of a wild west out there. You've got these for-profit companies that will negotiate with your creditors for less than full balance. You have to make a lump sum payment. And
Mitchell, I don't know what happened there, but I had a glitch in my earphones. Oh. I'm assuming it came over the air. So just say that again, because it was...
Debt settlement companies, and again, there's been lots of issues going on with debt settlement companies. You typically will pay debt settlement companies a series of payments over some number of months. And then they will make a negotiated settlement with your credit card company. The issue that you get into is they typically will not intervene with your creditor until you have the amount that they're going to settle or close to it. And so any collection efforts or anything else that's going along with your creditor, they don't deal with. So you're hurting your credit, you're getting all these collection calls, you're escalating, and yet you're making a partial payment to somebody else. So it's sort of the Wild West out there. There's not a lot of regulations. Attorney generals across the country are looking into these organizations, and I feel there's going to be some real regulations come in the next 2 years. You need to be very careful dealing with them. And so much, you hear this commercial, and I heard it today, that we know the secret programs your credit card companies don't want you to know
about. Yes, yes.
And that's almost misleading to me, because there are no secret programs. The secret program is that if you haven't made a payment in 6 months and you're going to offer them half of what they're owed, they're probably going to take it because they don't think they're going to get paid anything. So it's very misleading out there.
Right. Well, I guess the big question is then, especially with the internet now, companies can set themselves up as legitimate storefronts. How do we determine if we're really dealing with a genuine credit counselor or a debt settlement agency?
The difference between those two is really very easy to determine. Credit counseling organizations are going to be non-profit organizations, 501c3 organizations. These are organizations that the IRS has deemed to have an exempt purpose and are going to be nonprofit. So if you'll call them up and ask if they're a nonprofit, you can even get their tax returns that'll show that they're nonprofit organizations just by asking them over the phone. Now, debt settlement companies are almost exclusively for-profit companies, and determining the good from the bad among those is really what you need to do investigation for. So credit counseling are nonprofits, debt settlements are for-profit.
Okay, very good. I want to just read another listener question because we had quite a few come through. And this, again, was one that I saw repeated from several people. And this was from Paul. He says he lost his job. His partner lost his job. And their son was in a bad car accident and lost their job, too. 9 months into this and we're so far down the rabbit hole, I can't see any way out. We're moving into a small apartment. Well, this is... part of the story, but we don't really need to go into all of that. But the bottom line is he almost got a job last week and was turned down at the last minute. And the employer, when he questioned why because, you know, offers had been made, was told, well, I'm sorry, we can't tell you why, but it was something on your credit report.
Wow, I hear this more and more. He needs to make sure that that's what they did. At least still, more and more people are pulling credit and looking into those information. But it sounds like he's really had several of the big four.
Yeah.
That people that we talked about earlier, and also that he's going down the right path. In the book, we talk about what are the options you have. Number one, deal with it on your own. Play better offense or defense. That's make more and spend less. Number two, some sort of loan, family, friends, the bank. Three, credit counseling. Four is debt settlement. And then if those things aren't working, it's talking to an experienced bankruptcy attorney who can look at your budget, look at your income and expenses, and see if bankruptcy's right or if there's another alternative out there for it.
Mm. Now, a bankruptcy, I read in your book, can cost $2,500 to $3,000, I think it was. So, you know, when somebody's in a really tough situation, it sounds as though him and his family are, is there assistance for them at that point to pay that bankruptcy fee?
You know, and that's there's a misconception about bankruptcy that only people who file bankruptcy are broke. And generally, that's not the case. Though he may be a little bit of an exception right now, it sounds like he'll ultimately be gainfully employed. It's just he may not have the amount of income to take care of all of the debts and the expenses that he's accrued over the last couple of years. So bankruptcy attorneys, they're not inexpensive, but they can, if you think about in terms of the amount of debt you're getting rid of, you can get rid of $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, even $100,000 worth of debt. It is going to cost you $2,500, $3,000, even more than that, but you do want to have a qualified bankruptcy attorney to help you. It's a complicated process, and you need somebody on your side in that process.
Right, right. Now, we had another email from a listener named Julia, and she had her hours cut, and she went to one of those stores that talks about getting an advance on your paycheck. That's kind of a rabbit hole you don't want to go down, right?
Oh, it so is. The cash advances, the title loans. This is another industry, like the debt settlement company, that there's been lots of scrutiny on, and the fees and the interest associated with that can be usury at best. I mean, it's over 300% on an annual basis.
What? 300%?
In many states, it
wow.
is. It is very, very expensive money, and if you can at all avoid it, swallow the pride, ask family, ask friends. You are really getting in a situation that you don't want to get in by going to a payday loan place, cash advance place, or a title loan. These are places that if you can avoid them, you definitely need to, because there's not many people don't get out of that sort of death spiral down the debt hole.
Mm. It's too bad that, you know, in times when people need help most, there are other people out there who will take advantage like that.
It truly is. It also goes back to education. And after the people take our educational courses through the nonprofit, we hear over and over again, I wish I would have had this information when I was in high school or just getting out of my own.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real lack of knowledge about basic economics and finance, personal finance, that we need to make sure our children are educated so that we don't create another generation of people who don't know how to balance a checkbook, how to
Right.
create a simple budget.
Right. And there are plenty of free classes out there for that if we look around. You've got some great resources, on your website and in the book.
Yes, and that's really the entire point of the book. It's not to say debt settlement companies or credit counseling or bankruptcy is right for every person. About giving information and empowering people to make the very best decisions they can and also pass that knowledge on to their spouses and their kids.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. There's no one-size-fits-all. You know, so many books and experts out there have a one-track point of view on this is how you need to do it. And there are different strokes for different folks, and we have to figure out what works best for us.
It definitely is, and I'm not an advocate of just saying that everybody should not have debt or that you should not have any credit cards. I believe in the society we live in, we have to incur debt to have a home, sometimes even to get a higher education. Credit cards are a must for renting hotel rooms or renting a car. We live in a society that is cashless in many ways, and to interact at a high level, you have to have those instruments to help you.
Yeah. Now, what's your viewpoint on this? Because there are differing views on this. Some people will say pay off your highest credit card, highest interest rate credit card first. Others say no, tackle the lowest one first because it gives you a psychological little boost to clear one of your debts.
I think that is a great question, and there's not a right answer for that either. If you're going to look at strictly financially, paying your highest interest rate off will always come out first. But that psychological boost you talk about, when you start paying off your lowest balance first and then take all of the extra money after you pay that one and apply it to your next highest balance, really does work. I was talking with a gentleman on a show last week who had $32,000 worth of debt. He and his wife had accumulated over several years. And over the period of 2 years, and they made about $60,000 a year, over a period of 2 years, they paid off all but just about $4,000 or $5,000 using that snowball method of paying the lowest one off first. Mm-hmm. They felt some momentum, and he said, we almost felt addicted in a good way to keep on paying these debts off. They built some momentum, and it was really, he said, fun.
Yeah,
to
make
pay
a game
off
of it.
Debt.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and if you can get the kids involved, and you know, so many people say, oh, we don't want our kids to know we're having money problems, but I think that's one of I don't have kids, it's easy for me to talk. But that's one of the first places I would start, because I see how many of my friends' kids are just constantly, you know, asking for money, and they don't understand, you know, it has to be earned.
It is a great starting point to start the conversation about money, involving the spouse, involving the kids, setting financial goals, and saying no. And I have three kids. It's very difficult to say no when they want a new computer game or different shoes.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever you talk about it, it costs money. And, you know, we're in debt and we have to get out of debt and let's earn this money to those things. It's a great conversation starter to where we are financially, setting goals as a family, and then achieving those goals through hard work.
Right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to look at money personality and how that can influence our situation. And we'll look at some tips for securing our financial future. My guest is Mitchell Allen, and you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show, now at its new time, Wednesdays at noon, here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to brighten your day.
Lewis and Clark would be proud. We're exploring new territory on the air every day right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. We're talking today with Mitchell Allen about some money issues that are commonly affecting quite a number of people right now. I want to talk in this segment, Mitchell, about money personality and how that influences how we spend and how we view money. I read an article somewhere that said if you ask a husband and wife how many assets they have, they'll often see them entirely different. So let's talk a little bit about that.
They really do. Generally speaking, men and women see money and deal with money differently and have different personalities. Money issues is one of the number one stressors in a relationship. So understanding what your spouse, what he or she thinks about money and how they spend money is vital to a healthy relationship, particularly when you start getting into debt. And there are lots of different types of people out there. people who splurge. I call them splurge spenders. These are people who act as like high rollers. You had mentioned before that a friend of yours didn't understand how another person was able to live the way they do.
Right.
Most likely that person, if they don't have family money or some other source of income, they just splurge and they spend all the money they have and maybe even more. Then other people are called sale spotters. When they see a sale, they think it's such a good deal that they can't pass it up.
I have a friend like that. Oh, it's a bargain, whether I need it or not. It's a bargain.
You know, it's funny. I say it in the book, and it's only, it's really just to be funny, but I can't tell you how many times my wife has come home and started the conversation with, "You won't believe how much money I saved you today."
Right.
And my thought is, well, does that mean, you know, our balance in our bank is going to go up? Well, typically, no. It's just that, well, that we got a very good deal on something. And if it wasn't a planned purchase, then you're really not saving money.
Mm.
And then there are people who are just overly generous. I call those the givers. These are people who like to show their affection through money. And many of us, parents or you know, all of us children, we can understand how people can mistake money for love.
Right,
And many people get into that habit. And then there's, I say in the book, the ostrich, and this is these are spenders that just keep their heads in the sand as far as their financial situation. They're just oblivious to how much money they have, where they spend it. And I see these quite often. People will come in and show me their budget, and I look at it, and in reality, or in their budget, they are making $400 or $500 in excess every month. And they say, oh, that can't be the case. You go back two or three iterations looking at their checking account, and all of a sudden they realize they have no clue about where their money's actually going.
So the first place we need to start is just knowing where our money's going. We hear it constantly, and nobody wants to sit down and figure it out, but it really is the only way to begin, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Creating a budget. It doesn't have to be hard. There are simple forms on our website or any website. Just how much money you make? And that's a pretty easy thing. You can grab your paycheck and say, this is how much I brought home. This is my income. Mm. But then when you get to expenses, after you get past your home and your car, maybe your insurance, if you have child support or student loan, now you start talking about meals, entertainment, clothing, gas. Those are things that we don't keep track of very easily or very readily. Look at your checking account, look at your debit card, and write everything down in categories, and then you'll find out a true situation of your expenses.
Mm. I had a listener email from somebody who owns a latte stand, and she said this. She said, please don't tell everyone they have to cut out their daily latte. I cringe every time I hear a financial advisor saying that. but I think they pick on the latte one because it's easy. But there are ways, if we look at our day, that I certainly waste money. I know that, you know.
Right. And from y'all being in Seattle, I don't want to pick on the latte. But
well, I'd never thought of it before until she emailed me, and I was like, well, yeah, it's really probably affecting their business.
And I have actually said that. You think of a $3 or $4 cup of coffee,
mm-hmm.
and you got a scone with that. You're talking a couple of $100 a month if you do that on a regular basis. Well, a couple of $100 a month just from that, if you go out and eat out for lunch instead of bringing your lunch, you're talking about $400 or $500 without even thinking. And that, if you're serious about dealing with it or on your own, those are the things that you're going to cut out first, and you will see a dramatic improvement in your bottom line by just watching those little expenses.
Right. Now, once we've got a clear picture of where our money's going right now, we need to sit down together. It's no good one person in the family doing it, is it? Everybody has to sit down together. And you recommend including kids in that.
Yes, it is vital to the family and to the success of your plan to include everybody, so it is a real team effort. And it's not all just boring. It can be fun. Have rewards built into it when you pay off a credit card, splurge and go do something, or if you pay off all of your debt, you know, celebrate these small successes and include everyone. You've got to include the kids, because if they're putting pressure on you to spend money that you don't have, you know, that's going to affect not only your finances, but also how you're thinking about yourself. And there's a point in the book, the Survival Guide to Debt, is that I say you are not your debt. You must separate your net worth from your self-worth. So many people don't do that. And because they're in debt, they feel bad about themselves, almost to the point where they're depressed.
Yeah. I like in the book how you say right-sizing. We need to right-size. Not, you didn't use the term downsizing because people feel deprived if they, you know, feel, oh, I've got to get rid of stuff or cut things out. But I think right-sizing is a very livable term.
It really is. And there's another thought that I've heard someone say, that when you're comparing with people, don't compare up. When you compare up, you're saying, well, they have this and I don't. Compare down. You compare it to people who are less fortunate or have less than we do. We'll almost always feel blessed with what we do have, and we have to live within our means. That is just a key to financial security.
Mm. And avoid blame. This is a big one because there is a tendency for us to overlook our own foibles. And think that what we want to buy is more important than what somebody else wants to buy in the family. But it's very important to avoid blame, because otherwise that builds resentment and all kinds of other issues, doesn't it?
It really does. And mistakes and mishaps are going to happen when you're dealing with debt. And no one is blameless about the situation. If you clearly communicate, if everyone is on a budget about what they're going to do, when these things happen, talk through them. Get just like a diet. Once you get off of the diet or off of the budget, you just got to jump right back in it the next day, and reach towards your goal. Another thing, an interesting thing, and I talk in the book about saying keep yourself poor. And I use that "keeping poor" in quotes. That make your money harder to get at.
Yeah.
Putting that money in. If you have money, a lot of money in your pocket, everybody has a tendency to go out and spend it.
Yeah.
If you have a lot of money or a little bit of money, extra money in your checking account, it's that burning a hole in your wallet. You're wanting to get it out. But if you put in a checking account that you have to go to the bank to get it out, or you put that money into your home by paying down your principal, it's harder to get at. And if it's harder to get at, you're very much less likely to spend it.
Right. And I remember years and years ago, I took my credit card that I believed I could not live without. I took that and wrapped it and taped it. And then I stuck it in a little safety deposit box that I have. So I had to think very hard. You know, it took a lot of unwrapping to get that credit card out before I spent it.
I haven't heard that. That's great.
I just couldn't cut it up, but it was very inaccessible to me. And one of the last tips you talk about is sharing responsibilities. So often, it certainly happened in my household that, you know, one person typically thinks they're better with money, or the other partner doesn't want to be bothered with money. But you say it's important that we share responsibilities on that.
It is very important to share the responsibility. So you just have somebody to double check it. If you know somebody else is going to review the bank statement or to help you reconcile them, it's just an added buffer to make sure that somebody else, it's accountability to somebody else, and it's also inclusion. If only one person is dealing with balancing your checkbook and the other person just has the checkbook, they don't feel included. And so when you're setting the budget, they're not going to want the help.
Right. And last piece of advice that I want to make sure we get out there is you can save no matter how tight your budget. There's a website you give in the book. It's called 66ways.org, the number 66ways.org, ideas on how to save money on a tight budget. What would you like to leave listeners with today, Mitchell?
Well, all the things that we said, I don't want to come across as a negative a negative thing. There is a way out of your debt. It's taken a long time to get into the debt. You're not your debt. Separate your net worth from your self-worth and create a budget and a plan and set goals with your family. And sooner than you think, you will be in a better situation.
Thank you. Thank you for being with us today and sharing your advice and your website. This is a really great website packed full of information. And as I said earlier in the show, if you don't like writing letters, Mitchell has a bunch of forms up there. All you need to do is plug in the numbers and your name and the letter pops up right there for you. And it's called, the website is survivalguidetodebt.com, correct, Mitchell?
Yes.
survivalguidetodebt.com. And my guest, Mitchell Allen, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
His book, again, is called A Survival Guide to Debt, How to Overcome Tough Times and Restore Your Financial Health. And I want to thank each of you for being with us today. I want to thank Mike for manning the board for us today, too. And we'll be back next week with an all-new program. Please join us then. Check out conversationslive.net for upcoming shows and for, I think we've got over 100 podcasts up there now on a whole bunch of different topics. So conversationslive.net. And if you have feedback or questions on today's show, you can reach me at 800-495-7617. 800-495-7617. See you next week. Live well, live strong.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, we'll discuss the action program for moving beyond loss. Whether that's divorce, loss of a job, a loved one, your health, or one of life's other challenging events. Tune in Monday at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.